Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, currently based in Los Angeles, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and rural emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to extend a special thanks to Picmonic, our sponsor. If you are an OT or OTA student looking for an excellent learning resource and study aid, Picmonic might be for you. Whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam, it is a visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams. It uses audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. If you're interested in trying it for yourself, sign up today using the link in the show notes or using the code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your Picmonic membership. Welcome back, OT friends. I'm thrilled to introduce you to today's guest of honor. Today, we have with us Dr. Carlyn Rayom. She is an occupational therapist who specializes in supporting mothers. Welcome to the podcast, Carlyn.
Thank you so much, Patricia. I'm really happy to be here with you today. Excited to dive into all of this.
Yes, we're thrilled to hear about work in maternal wellness and pelvic health and how you're utilizing your OT lens and specializing working with moms. But before we get into all of that, as usual, I'd love for you to start by telling us a little bit about yourself and perhaps some of your favorite occupations.
You got it. I was born in Costa Rica. My parents met in the Peace Corps down there and moved back to Wisconsin when I was very young. So that's where I grew up and was raised in Madison, Wisconsin, and lived there throughout high school and then moved out to Los Angeles to pursue a professional dance career. I ended up finishing my undergrad and graduate education at USC, and that was where I learned about the profession of occupational therapy. And so I finished my bachelor's in psychology at USC while I was auditioning and dancing, and then went on to complete my master's and my OTD. And I feel really grateful for being, you know, at USC and connected to a really incredible network of colleagues throughout my graduate school program. And, you know, I think then that connects with, I was really happy to be in LA so I could dance all of the time. Dancing remains one of my favorite occupations. Now, many years later, it has morphed a little bit. So it's not the same kind of dancing I was doing back then where I was taking 4 and 5 classes a day, but I still try to get a dance class in whenever I'm able to. I also really enjoy dancing by myself to music throughout the house and with my little one. She's 4 now. We'll have little dance parties. I have taken up running. So I will listen to some of my favorite like tunes that I used to get out onto the dance floor with now are on my running playlist. And so that's a newer occupation for me. I've really found as well that I cherish morning rituals. And so one of my morning rituals I love is to like hand grind coffee and do like a pour over coffee. That's a really meaningful occupation for me to start my day. So I've found these kind of grounding restorative practices that I do as some of my fun occupations that I look forward to.
Oh, I love it. What motivated you to contribute to this podcast, aside from me inviting you?
Yes. Well, this, you know, it's so interesting. I have had such a winding path for my OT professional path. It didn't follow a straight line. And that, when I was in the midst of it, I found myself questioning myself, like, why am I not able to go from point A to point B? Like, it felt like that's how it's supposed to go or something. And so over all of these years that I've been doing this work, I have found that I am not alone in my kind of winding path. And so I think those of us that continue to hear stories of others who have had similar but different twists and turns, and have followed, you know, areas of passion, just areas of interest and curiosity, and how in the end, then looking back, you know, over the last decade, decade plus, I can see how everything kind of lined up to help support where I am right now. Whereas, you know, I found myself questioning myself in different places along the way. So when I learned of you and your work and that, you know, the uncommon OT, that really speaks to my heart, because I feel like all of my OT positions I've ever been in have been kind of in non-traditional settings or emerging areas. I haven't really ever worked in kind of a more traditional OT setting. And so it's interesting, you know, right now I'm in academia, and sometimes students will say, oh, well, when you work in a hospital setting, what was your experience? And I'm like, well, I've actually never worked in a hospital setting. and I think, you know, they're shocked by that. And, you know, I really felt called to share my story so other people can continue to know that we each have our own path in this work. And yeah, all of them are valid and beautiful, and there's so much learning to happen. And I think it's powerful to kind of normalize that experience too, where you don't have to know right away what specialty area you're going to dive into and do all the training and do that forever. There are lots of different, I mean, that's what's really beautiful to me about our profession, is the term occupation and the work that we do, and the roles that we can play for people, it is available to every single person on the planet, right? Like, it should be available. There's need there, you know, so we really can dive in and provide powerful support. So I want to continue to encourage people who are interested to take uncommon paths to do that.
Oh, thank you. You are the perfect candidate for this podcast. And like you, I feel that, you know, my experiences over the years have also been non-traditional, or not the typical of most OTs. And precisely the reason why this podcast exists was that to sort of create community around me, and gain that support, right? So I also agree and can relate to what you said about how your career evolved over time, and how each of your experiences really contributed to where you are today, right? Because I feel that very much so in my career too. And, you know, also not having worked much in a typical medical model setting, right? In fact, I've been practicing for quite some time and really had a passion for mental health. And because of that, I ended up working in a hospital, in a psychiatric unit, but in a more medical model type of scenario, just because that's what was available 20 years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. So I love having you on to share a little bit more about, you know, an alternative path, because I think even up to today, a lot of our students or a lot of our, you know, OTs in training are still being funneled towards that direction. So we want to hear about your uncommon OT work, to have you describe for us, maybe the setting in which you work in, the population that you serve, maybe some of the needs that you address.
Absolutely. So I opened my clinic, Supported Mama, in 2020. I started with providing virtual services given the pandemic, and then also was providing in-home or mobile services. I gave birth to my daughter in 2019 and felt that there was this real gap in care throughout that postpartum time period. And I remember wishing throughout that time that I could step outside myself to provide OT services to myself. And I just was in a space where I couldn't do it, you know, sleep deprived and just generally overwhelmed. And that was really tricky for me. But all the while I had this background, you know, these background thoughts of, okay, this is a need. And so I started Supported Mama, and it has evolved. I now have a brick and mortar. I've been in a physical clinic location for the past year, a little over a year. And I predominantly serve people who have given birth. So I see a handful of people that are pregnant, but more often it's people who have given birth at any point from 2 weeks after giving birth up through, you know, many years. They might have children in their teens, but they feel like a portion of their healing hadn't been addressed. And that might, it ranges from pelvic pain, lower back pain, neck pain, because of the way that they're doing their daily tasks, caring for an infant or older children. So there's a lot of, you know, body mechanics, ergonomics, core strength, corrective exercise that I'll provide support around. A lot of people that I see are navigating the experience of trauma, whether that be with the birth experience itself or something that occurred during that postpartum phase. And that could be with their infant. It could be something that occurred with a partner, if they have one, or with a family member. So lots of different conversations we have around that. And so one of the ways that shows up in the work we do together is through a lot of nervous system work, nervous system down training and regulation, managing that stress response, supporting people in, you know, knowing that this is a safe space. We're just, you know, it's your time for you. We'll focus on taking, you know, educating them on the value of a deep breath and how they have control in being able to support their relaxation response through those mechanisms. And I provide a lot of education. People, it's very clear to me through the work that I do that people are not receiving education consistently around some of this. And it's very often that clients will say, oh, I feel silly for asking this, or I know I should know this, whether it's related to an anatomy question or a breathing question. It's some of these topics that feel like very simple in some ways, but, you know, people just, there aren't spaces that are carved out to really talk about or allow time for some of these things. So in any case, so some of the types of, you know, what our sessions look like, and who I'm seeing. It's people who really need step-by-step support around that. And what's really powerful too is how that all radiates for them. So, you know, they might come in talking about pain or an experience of prolapse or some kind of pelvic floor dysfunction. We might end up working on breath and stress management. They realize then how they're more able to connect to their pelvic floor and their pelvic floor symptoms. And then they're able to play more with their children because they're not experiencing pelvic heaviness, or they're not worried about, you know, exacerbating their prolapse symptom. You know, so it's really powerful when you see how starting in one area can have these radiating powerful impacts to all these other areas of occupation. So it's really
yes. Thank you so much for connecting that, or for sort of someone having difficulty breathing to somebody who may potentially be having some difficulties interacting with their children or engaging in play with their children. And I think sometimes OTs or OT practitioners aren't really even able to put those pieces together. That's why they're not, or they're hesitant to sort of embark in the same journey. I really, really very much appreciate that. And also the specific examples that you gave, your approach is incredibly holistic, right? And that your OT lens really lends to the process where you're able to really identify, okay, where is my client at, and where do I need to begin, and what are we trying to solve, right? What is the issue? What is the functional consequence of this, and how is it affecting this person's day to day?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's interesting when people come to work with me. You know, there's a range of different types of people that I'm thinking of. I have a client in mind who knows what she should do. I'm using air quotes here, like what she should do, but you know, she feels overworked. She, you know, has two young kids. She's, you know, she's also, you know, part-time paid employed position. And so she's navigating, you know, household tasks with her paid work, with childcare responsibilities. She also, you know, states she has a really supportive partner. So there's a piece of her that's like, I don't even feel like I should complain because I have help, but also it's so much. And what I've found is just carving out that space for her to feel heard, you know, yes, to be validated. You are working so hard. You know, you are working so hard. And it's not just about, okay, well, you just have to do these five exercises, you know, a couple times a day in order to improve your symptoms. It's like, she's not breathing. She's not present. You know, so I recognize with her, we have to start in some other places where mm-hmm. she can feel like she can, you know, be successful, A, you know, and B, where she can kind of feel supported and a pocket of rest or different approach, you know. And so that's what I love about the OT lens within this specialty area is it really feels, I mean, so many of the different roles in which OTs are well suited, you know, require this holistic or, you know, benefit from such this holistic approach. But yeah, I really find with maternal wellness, pelvic health, it's important to just recognize where people are from that emotional standpoint, in order to figure out what might be the best next step for them and how that's going to be connected with their daily occupations or whatever they're trying to achieve functionally, you know, allowing permission yeah. for rest.
I absolutely love that you're making this, you've created a business and making this service available to all of these women. It's disruptive, but I think it's because of also all the roles that we're expected to take on in our daily lives that it gets sort of pushed under the rug, right? So I'm so excited that, that you've decided to really center your services or your offerings around this particular need. So I want to hear more about your sessions and, you know, more kind of examples of a typical day for you. But before we get there, I would love for you to kind of, so here you are, supported mama is a year old. Mm-hmm. It's thriving. You're getting referrals. You have a caseload and, you know, I'm sure a variety of different aspects to, you know, to your business, so to speak, and to your offerings. Mm-hmm. Can you fill in the gaps for us in terms of how you got there? I know we talked about having done a lot of non-traditional types of things in the past too. But yeah, from OT school, what types of experiences did you have? And did any of those experiences contribute to where you are today and having been able to set up or being the entrepreneur that you are today?
Yes, great question. Well, you know, so one of my mentors was Dr. Florence Clark, who's a previous chair at USC and a previous AOTA president. And she instilled in me the value of being bold, asking for what you're putting together a proposal, just moving forward, being bold and moving forward. And so it was through her mentorship that I got my first position out of OT school, which was a workplace wellness position within USC. I was working for employees and creating wellness programs for employees to help them be healthier and happier. And mm-hmm. and so that was the very first time that I saw in action, okay, here, I have a skill set. There's a need here. How can we advocate for a position to be created, or what would be the funding? Like, that would have not crossed my mind before. I probably would have said, oh, there's no position that exists for this. Like, let me do a search on your traditional job search platform. Mm-hmm. I don't see a workplace wellness OT position. Well, what do I do now? So I really credit Dr. Clark for kind of shifting my thinking at that time and helping me advocate for that position to be created. And that really set me up for all of the positions that I had after that. I ended up, after leaving that position, I was working with the USC OT faculty practice, where we had a variety of different lifestyle redesign programs, which informed my clinical expertise and just made me feel really competent in providing wellness-based services. And so that has been critically helpful for the work that I'm doing now. I took over the position of the Lifestyle Redesign for College Student Program, where I was supporting students who had transitioned from high school to college. And when you think about the disruption in habits and routines that happens there, what a beautiful fit for OTs to help, you know, navigate that process of creating intentional new routines. And how can you set things up to promote your health and well-being? So then you fast forward to many years later, where now I've given birth and talk about like disruption to habits and routines, how I'm needing to think about as an OT, how do we help people navigate this time of transition? Everything feels different from a wellness foundation. How do we support wellness of new parents? I had a, you know, background in ergonomics. I could tell like my body mechanics with all those repetitive tasks, it was not well suited to, you know, and in the moment, like I, you know, like I mentioned, I couldn't step out. What would be a better arrangement for how I could have things in this nursery space? Like I just couldn't even do that. So I think my background has really provided me with all of the like the tangible, the knowledge about wellness interventions and stress management and grounding and, you know, alignment and posture and breath. So I have that foundation to inform the work that I'm doing, and also so much in mental health that I did throughout all of those different roles. That college student position that I was in, I really spent a lot of time with people with a variety of different diagnoses, but very much anxiety and depression. And that's also what I tend to see in the postpartum time period. Mm-hmm. So I think from a clinical standpoint, all of that put me in a great position. And the entrepreneurial fire was lit from early on. And so just felt clear, okay, there's not a need. I mean, there is a need. There's not a service available. And yes. So I need to fill that gap. If I see it, I need to fill it. And so it's been very much an adventure of diving in head first. Like I'm somebody who would ideally want to know everything there is to know first, have all of my forms and processes totally clear and foolproof, and then launch whatever it is. And I'll say that when people reach out who are interested in this area of practice, what I say to them is like, the need is so great, and there are people that need your services right now, that there is no time to waste to perfect the intake form by adding this one other question or taking this other question off, or, you know, like all of those little pieces, they'll get sorted out, but don't let that hold you back from putting this service out into the world. Yes. I believe that so strongly. All of us, like all OT practitioners, our strengths in active listening and therapeutic presence and the way that we show up with our clients, that is so critical for this population. Even if you did nothing else besides, you know, like I don't even want to minimize that. Like that is so huge to be present with somebody who's having a rough time around, you know, you can bring so much value to that conversation.
Oh, I agree 1000%. You were born for this. Number one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I love the passion in you. I see it through the screen. I'm sure our listeners can, you know, it oozes out of your voice. I'm not surprised to hear that you started early on. And I chuckled a little bit when you talked about how the traditional sort of job descriptions, and I read them when I'm, you know, sort of from time to time looking at job descriptions, I just think to myself, oh my gosh, I can't do that. I can't do any of that. It's really a lot of I just did not have that kind of experience in those traditional settings. So I'm happy that there's more of us out there in the world.
I want to say to that, because I do think this comes up all of the time. Like my offering to anybody who's like interested in this work or other fields, think about who, like, be your own best advocate around this. Because if you know the need is there and that you can bring support to the whatever population it is, you figure out who needs to hire you. You know, maybe it doesn't start like a full-time position, but can you offer a workshop? Can you offer your services as a consultant? Can you make your value known and then build from there? because that is something that we can't just sit around and wait for somebody to say like, oh, I really wish, like, we need an OT in this space. Like, that doesn't tend to happen, especially in these non-traditional areas. So yes. You find, you know, like a group of allies or a related service provider that you feel like you can connect with, who will see and understand the perspective and what you're adding to their portfolio, and advocate for something to be created, something new.
Such great advice. I go back to your first position that you mentioned, being a work, you know, doing work wellness related things for employees. I'm sure that position did not call for an occupational therapist necessarily.
Mm-hmm. It didn't. It absolutely didn't. And so, it was just about being creative, you know, being creative, not taking no, figuring out who we needed to talk to, who we needed to convince, you know. And right now I'm in a position as the advocacy and government affairs committee chair with our state's professional association. And I'm enjoying ongoing opportunities to just keep educating. It's all about educating people. Once people know that we can work in certain settings, I have not yet come across somebody who doesn't see how it would be valuable. You know, it's just that they don't know.
So great point. Right?
Like who needs to know?
That's an absolutely great point. Because once they sort of meet you and sort of understand what you're all about and see the light, right? it just becomes an automatic sort of yes for other things, right? Or whoa, there should be more of you. I don't know if you've heard that. Why aren't there OTs in every shelter is what I always kind of get. There should be activities, you know, in all of these settings. So yes, I'm preaching to the choir. Maybe we can segue into having you describe for us, what is a typical day like for you? Yes. Maybe a typical session.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So I've really put a lot of thought into creating my physical space to feel very nurturing. And so when people walk into my clinic, it doesn't feel medical or sterile. It's, you know, it has soft colors and warm light. And so they come in and then first thing they see is just kind of a seated conversation area with comfortable chairs and pillows. And that's where I start with everyone. And we just have a check-in and I ask how they're doing, you know, and, what's come up for them since the last time we connected? What do they feel like is, you know, the number one thing they want to work on during our time together that day? You know, as is true for all most OT sessions, I might have a plan in my mind and then the person comes in and something else has happened or they're just in a different place that day. I need to shift. So I always have that check-in time. For some clients, we stay over there the whole time and it might be more of a problem solving kind of a coaching model, thinking through what their daily routines look like, what might need to be shifted, kind of more of logistical planning, time management, you know, that kind of thing. For other clients, they immediately, it's clear like they need and want to move into their bodies a little bit. And so we will head over. I have a mat space where I have some different foam rollers and different like therapeutic balls and we'll move into some breath work, some gentle corrective exercise. I'm working with a lot of people who have pelvic floor dysfunctions or trying to work on their core strength or have body pain. And so we might shift over there. Sometimes clients come in and are so in fight or flight or freeze, you can just see it. They're not taking deep full breaths. So we might actually start in my mat area doing a restorative yoga pose. So I have a bolster. I've got a little weighted sandbag that provides some proprioceptive input. I've got eye pillows. So some people enjoy, you know, just being set up in a restorative yoga pose for maybe 5 minutes. And after that is when we do more of our check-in or we can move forward to planning or any other piece of an intervention session. But they really need that moment to settle, you know, connect to themselves. So that can be what some of my sessions look like. And then I also have a treatment table where Some people are coming in for specific pelvic floor work. Maybe they want an internal pelvic floor release or are experiencing specific aches and pains. And we do some manual therapy. And I have some background with myofascial work. And so I will do more of a manual therapy session for them. Pretty much in all of those spaces, I'm facilitating and encouraging deep full breaths. I'm facilitating, encouraging connection to their body. I do a lot of checking in. I want to know what is their experience of the of whatever it might be that's happening, if it's a manual treatment or movement, because a lot of the people that I work with are disconnected from themselves or from their pelvis or from their bodies after going through pregnancy. And so I really encourage people to have these ongoing check-ins to know what their experience of something is, so they can say, this feels uncomfortable to me, I choose to stop, or this feels really good, I would like to do this more, because it really is a valuable piece in like the communicating their needs, advocating for themselves, that I want to nurture in my clinic space, that radiates into them being able to advocate for their needs with a partner, with a physician, with another healthcare provider. And So those are in general kind of what my sessions will look like. We wrap up with, you know, some goals, for the time before we next see each other. And I always make sure that they feel like they're really doable, you know, so usually it's one goal, maybe two. But smaller is better from my perspective. And I want them to feel successful, you know, and able to achieve that. So that's what most of my sessions look like, some variation of that.
Yeah. I love the thoughtfulness that you place into, yeah, every aspect, from the environment to, sure, you're considering the temperature, the lighting, really kind of feeling out where your clients might be at. It sounds like there's a lot that mindfulness is a big aspect in your approach too. And, you know, giving folks the ability to articulate, right? I think sometimes it's also giving folks the words to use to describe certain feelings. And, you know, some of these, I'm imagining that it can get really personal, because you're sort of in one's, just not even just personal as in physically personal, sort of in that space, but perhaps some info that they may not have even shared with anyone but you, right? Mm-hmm. Not even their partner. So it sounds like these sessions can be really intimate.
Yes. And I, every single time, feel so deeply grateful and honored to share that space with clients. I'm just the trust that they have, you know, I just deeply value it, and it connects me with my why of the work. You know, I really do feel like I'm meant to be doing this work right now. When that happens, when clients feel comfortable to share, you know, whatever. And you're right, it's such a spectrum of really deep, sometimes scary thoughts or uncomfortable thoughts, or you know, you name it. I hear a lot. And so I think gratitude is kind of the overwhelming emotion that I have of related to that, you know.
And I just feel that having your lens, and again, the OT perspective and the sort of ability to look at the bigger picture, right, really lends or makes you super well suited for this role that requires such finesse and sensitivity and a lot of compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's why anyone who is interested in this work, I love to support people getting into this, because we're just excellently suited to do this. It's so well nuanced. And this is, you know, I'll share openly, like right now I don't take students because of like all of the nuances that you're hearing. I feel really protective of my clinic space, and you know, wanting to nurture and support each client in this really sensitive, special way. But I haven't yet, it hasn't yet felt comfortable to me to bring a student into that like sacred exchange. And yeah. So I'm continuing to think about what are ways in which I can provide support for students, you know, that want to get into this, because I want people to continue to explore this niche, you know, but I hope people understand when I'm not able to take students in that clinic space right now, the why behind it, you know, it's really delicate space.
Yeah. And I think even in this conversation alone, I'm thinking students can take this information, right? Mm-hmm. And work with that. I mean, mm-hmm. knowing that there are these sensitive, there's a sensitive nature to the work, you know, how can you improve your skill set that might, you know, mm-hmm. has a lot to do with communication, right? Mm-hmm. Empathy, just therapeutic use of self. And mm-hmm. I personally feel that even though you're not taking students currently at your sites, that you're really providing a service just by sharing mm-hmm. the work that you're doing and the nuances that are involved with doing the work. So thank you for your honesty and the work that you're doing. Just more logistical questions. Mm-hmm. How do you receive your referrals? Do you have some really good referral sources? I know that's also a burning question for a lot of people.
You know, I think all of my biggest referral sources are from community collaboration, kind of word of mouth / me advocating for myself within, you know, the places in the community that I felt like would get it, you know, it's kind of what I was alluding to earlier. And so we do have like a local childbirth education center. And I started offering community pelvic health screenings there because I knew that that was a gap. I just felt like that population would be really interested. And so I've been doing that now for, gosh, I don't know, a year and a half or two, where we've had a partnership. I was previously teaching Pilates at a local studio here, and a lot of the clients that were coming into that Pilates studio said, hey, like I'm having some dysfunction, or I feel like I want some more specialized knowledge, or I'm generally having a hard time, or I can't get back into group classes or whatever it is. And so that became mm-hmm. a referral stream for me. I do have a handful of other healthcare providers in the area that are really supportive. I've been getting a lot of referrals from people who have received services elsewhere that their words are like cold and sterile is what their experience of those other settings were. And so, so some of the people that I see have previously tried to have some kind of support. And so that's like an extra layer of sensitivity. I really want to make sure that they have a positive experience, you know, because it takes a lot to have a negative experience and then say, I still need and want help. I'm going to try again.
Yeah.
So that's been a big population too. And that's something that I've enjoyed is connecting with local providers, all different types of providers in the area, where we might share a potential client, but they like knowing who are the other allies that I might have and be able to refer my clients mm-hmm. to. And so I'm enjoying that process of connecting with a really neat network in town, you know? I would say it's been just a few referral sources and then word of mouth of people that have had positive experiences. But those, yeah, a couple of key referral sources have been critical to grow my practice.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. I think that also gives our listeners some ideas on how perhaps to get started, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. Now, can we switch over to more money matters?
Sure.
May I ask you anything that you would like to share about money matters related to your business? Fees, how do you charge? How do you get reimbursed? Do you accept insurance? All
Great
of that
question.
Good stuff.
All things money. Okay. I do not accept insurance right now. I'm private pay, which it works well for me. Like I think that you know, I struggle a bit with the accessibility piece of that because I do want people to have access to these services. And so how I'm currently navigating that is I have my private pay clients, and then I am ongoing trying to figure out how to establish other creative community partnerships. So I continue to have some kind of local community screenings at a reduced rate offering where it's a less in-depth experience, but still is able to provide some, you know, a space for people to connect and have some questions answered. So I'm continuing to offer that. I have been offering increasing numbers of webinars and workshops for different groups of people or providers where I feel like my reach can be broader. So I have I'll be doing a webinar in a couple of weeks with a network of providers that go in home to lower income households who aren't able to access services. So they're kind of providing in-home services and so I'm providing information for them and they're going to be able to go into all these homes in another area away from where I live. And I just feel excited about the possibility of their reach. So I'm continuing to think about, okay, if it's almost like a train the trainer model, can I provide some tips and support that's more accessible to other people in that way? And that's an interesting and fulfilling revenue stream for me. So a portion is from I'm calling it consulting. And then the rest is from my direct, you know, client sessions. So it is private pay. I do provide super bills if people choose to go that route, but I do not directly bill insurance. So thus far, it's been working okay.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. There are other ways to support oneself as an OT other than just going the traditional route of billing for insurances, right? Now, if you were to decide to bill through insurances, is this type of work currently covered?
Great question. The answer is yes, broadly yes, I will say. I think, you know, there are some payers, that's where all of this gets really tricky. Oh, we need another episode, Patricia, like where I think it depends on the bandwidth of the person to be able to defend, you know, like how much do you want to spend of your day advocating for why it should be reimbursed? I think in the cases where, you know, there's been a denial and the OT is able to explain, like, this is what I did and why, I think it is possible that we're able to be reimbursed and some payers do reimburse. But then there are also some that just decide for whatever reason, no, they're not going to cover it. And, you know, if somebody had the bandwidth to take up that fight, would they shift their tune? I don't know. Probably some yes, some no. But in general, if you think about the work that we're doing, you know, activities of daily living, therapeutic activity, neuromuscular reeducation, like these are both. And so I'm going to just say, yes, these are reimbursable services.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if you were denied, then there's opportunity to appeal and sort of put in your justification. But that's good to know that it's generally, it's generally covered. Depending on, you know, the support or the justification that you include in your documentation.
That's right.
Can you share with us some recent challenges and recent wins or highs that you've had in your role?
Yes. okay. Recent, we'll do the recent highs. So, AOT President Allison Stover visited my clinic a couple weeks ago, and this is because she is dedicated to women's health, pelvic health, elevating that the need. And she wanted to, you know, visit my clinic to see how I do things over here. And it was a deeply, both personally and professionally, I still don't even have the words. It was a really meaningful trip. And so not only all of the interactions that we had, but also kind of thinking from just about my professional growth to be in a space where the AOTA president would be coming to connect with me to seek out my expertise and my thoughts about the direction for our profession and what advocacy is needed and all of that. It just was a moment that I could really sit back and say, I'm really proud of myself. I'm proud of my uncommon path and all of the directions, like all of the twists and turns that have brought me where I am and everything that I have gained and learned through that path, that it has come to this point where I feel really equipped to speak to the needs of this population, what OT can bring to this population, where, you know, advocacy is lacking within providing services. And so that's been the hugest win. I mean, I don't think I can top it really, you know, in the short term. I'm sure there will be something that will be amazing that I can't even yet envision, but that has been really significant. And I will share, like, on a related kind of direction, is some of the powerful community conversations that I've had with other people in town who are reaching out to me because they have heard from a client or from another provider about the services that I'm offering. And mm-hmm. and I really feel like it's now, maybe last year I was hearing clients sharing, oh, I heard about you from my friend. But now I'm hearing more providers say, oh, I heard about you from a client that I was, you know, that I'm seeing who had a positive experience. And so I love that clients are sharing with their providers about their positive experiences. So that feels like a win too. So yeah, I'm really feeling like in a space of excitement around all of the building momentum, which connects to actually some of the challenges.
Okay.
is that I think as a business owner, sole proprietor, just me. And so if I'm not working on something, nothing's happening with that thing. And so mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of building momentum and a lot of possibility in so many different spaces, which is, that is so exciting to me. And also I'm somebody who's used to doing things, doing them well, getting everything done on my to-do list, you know, and when you're running your own business, it feels like that's like impossible. You can't ever be done with everything. And you always have ideas about other ways in which you could grow. And
yeah.
So that is something that I'm continuing to navigate, is how do I balance my drive and my ability to accomplish what I would like to within each of those areas, while also having a fulfilling, restorative personal life, like being a good mama to my little one, making sure we mm-hmm. have time for our dance parties, you know. That's kind of what stands out to my mind as in my mind as a challenge right now.
Well, I think that you are, I want to congratulate you, number one, on your successes. I myself, I'm very proud of you as a fellow OT practitioner working in uncommon spaces. Just in, it takes a minute to feel like, okay, I've got this. And, you know, it takes years, in fact, to really feel that, okay, now I'm, feel like now I can actually be a subject matter expert. Right. And, you know, Allison Stover is knocking on my door, asking me questions about my work. That's fantastic. So that is huge. And I'm happy that you've, you know, you have that validation, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? And that same validation is kind of energizing you to continue what you're doing, which mm-hmm. is, we're so lucky for that. Because again, you're the subject matter expert, and I alone have learned so much already just in our, you know, brief conversation today. So I'm not surprised Dr. Stover went over to visit you, and gosh, how exciting that must have been. And you know, again, continuing to spread your word. I also appreciate you sharing the challenges. You know, it's, your work is so mindful and so, specifically thought through that, of course, you know, you would incorporate practicing what you preach, right?
Right.
A lot of us OTs, do not. So I love that you're so thoughtful in your process that you even think, okay, where am I in this? Am I being present? Mm-hmm. Am I feeling all the feels, and am I communicating what I need to communicate? So I think that's just such a testament to the type of clinician, the type of person that you are. And I think is probably a number one contributor to your success today and how you're feeling really well-rounded and just, you know, there's a certain level of kind of completeness and satisfaction in the way that you describe your career path. And it kind of gives me goosebumps because I'm excited. Yeah, I'm thrilled for you and that you've found this path and that you've found a comfortable way of being in that space. And yeah, having these conversations also affirms those things for me.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. Moving back to our questions, thanks again for sharing some of those challenges. Those are all so relatable to a lot of us. How do you continue to sort of stay on top of things that you're doing? Advice that you might have for folks who are interested in going down the same path as you have? How do you continue to learn? Any tips about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's beautiful when you're in an area that you're really passionate about is that learning more about that area is just like naturally, I'm like intrinsically motivated to just learn as much as I can and be exposed to different content areas that impact the population that I'm caring for. So, I am deep in a lot of different Facebook groups and communities where I'm connecting with like-minded, you know, practitioners that have different perspectives that are providing care around similar areas. I also love continuing education, all kinds of different courses, and I really always take away so much from so much learning from each of the courses. I've actually tried to slow down a little bit because I found myself taking a lot of courses, well, because I love learning, but also I kept feeling like I needed to take the courses in order to be able to provide the service. And so that's why I'm trying to like communicate the message of no, you don't necessarily need that one extra course or those five extra courses before mm-hmm. you do it. I felt like I'm not even able to apply all that I've learned in all these courses because I'm just, it's like, it's not even, I need to let something sink in. Let me see how that's going to, you know, filter through in the work that I do. Okay, now maybe I'm ready to acquire a little bit of a different skill set or a different perspective. And so I'm really intentionally trying to pace things out a little bit more this year than I have in years past where I took a lot of courses. But what's really amazing about, I think, the virtual learning that's available to us now is that so many courses you have access to for a lifetime. And so that's been amazing where I'll take a course and then I know I can always refer back to whatever the reference materials are, can rewatch it. And I've found that to be really helpful in the work that I do with clients. If something sticks out to me, I remember that we were talking about something in that one class, you know, and I'll pull it up so I can really apply that to a specific client. But those would be the main ways that I think that I stay current. I'm involved in both, you know, my state's professional association, mm-hmm. the national professional association. So I try to participate in communities of practice related to those. I have some dear friends who are, they are now very close friends, some of whom who I don't even know if we've ever met in person, but people who are, you know, also entrepreneurial and might be providing services to a similar population or slightly different, but I know that we can learn from each other in terms of just like the aspects of running a business. So there's a lot of learning that's happened there too. So I feel like I have a wide network of places that I get information to help continue to guide me forward.
Can you think of any specific OT skills that sort of really stick out for you that, you know, in working with in maternal wellness or in pelvic health work, these are really some key mm-hmm. OT skills to keep in mind.
I really think that just the active listening, that clear active listening, the ability to reflect, and so people feel heard and feel safe, the presence that is required when you're sitting with someone, being able to be still and have some silence, you know, being able to read, it's all related to like therapeutic use of self and therapeutic presence and really being aware and mindful of what that other person is bringing into the space. making sure that your interaction doesn't feel rushed, you know, slowing down if it feels like they need to slow down. So yeah, therapeutic presence, active listening, those are just like my top go-tos. Absolutely.
Great to know. Can you think of any common myths or misconceptions about your current role mm-hmm. that you'd like to demystify today?
Yeah, I think, I've kind of touched upon this earlier, but I really do think that people will reach out to me interested in the therapy practice and they will say, well, what certifications do I need to have before I'm able to practice? And you don't need any. You don't mm-hmm. need any extra certifications. Now, are there courses you could take to deepen your knowledge in certain areas? Absolutely. And specifically, if we're talking about like internal pelvic floor work and some of the, you know, pelvic health, that would be the area where I would recommend you need to take some coursework before you're seeing clients. But it's not that you need to take 5 courses. You know, it's not that you need to take, I want people to feel empowered to dive in into this work like a little bit before they feel like they're ready to. Because even if you've taken, like, let's say you've taken, like I took, and what's interesting is I thought I would never do internal pelvic floor work. I took OT Pioneers was one of the first courses that I took. And in that course, she provides a little bit of a video so you can see what even an internal assessment would look like. Because I didn't know, like, what would it look like for an OT to do that? And I took that course and I saw that portion. And I was like, I don't see myself ever doing that. Like, I just don't think I'm going to. And then fast forward, and I ended up signing up for several courses where I was doing internal work because I thought, well, I at least want to have that skill set or have a better understanding of what that might be to mm-hmm. figure out if I would actually use it. And now I do. It is a tool that I use. I don't use it with every client, but I feel comfortable to use it. And some clients really want that. So in any case, just to say that you can really dive deep into this knowledge and there's always more to learn. But mm-hmm. even if you've only taken one class, or even if you just know how to gather an occupational profile, sit with somebody, strategize what's not going so well for you, what supports do you have in place, like you could do that right now if you're an occupational therapy practitioner without having taken yet one more course. So I think that's kind of one of the biggest areas that I just want to empower people on. Many of you are ready right now. Dive in.
Such a great reminder. I'm one of those too who feels like, oh, I should just take that, you know, CEU, see where that takes me. I remember doing a really being course obsessed during the pandemic in particular, because I felt like I had, you know, oodles of time in my hands. But yes, sort of hearing this from other practitioners too, you know, do I need this credential? Do I need that credential? So what I'm hearing you say is that we have the skills in us as generalist OTs, mm-hmm. right, to be able to do simple sort of screenings and such, and that perhaps we want to just sort of explore a little bit within ourselves what that need is, right? Like why that need to have an extra credential or course mm-hmm. In order to feel like you're qualified to do something. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to jump on that bandwagon and say that we have a lot of skills already as it is. And I think sometimes it's just a bit of a reminder, right? Or a little bit of a confidence boost that we need to really take the step and take it even to another level. It's just to give it a shot, right? Just try it. Get your toe wet, not even your entire foot. Just test the waters and see. And in that process, if you feel inadequate or unsure, then there are courses out there that are available to help fill that gap. Yeah.
Yeah, I started at a website, otsandmaternalhealth.com, and there's a page of resources, and it has different continuing education courses that can be taken. It has ways where you can connect with other people, whether that's on Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, but just where you can start hearing the types of conversations, because I think a lot of it is around gaining confidence. To even know, like once you see how an OT practitioner might approach a maternal health session, I think many other OT practitioners would say, oh, I get it. I understand this is kind of like one potential framework, and that empowers you to figure out what might be your own way to approach it once you kind of see what's out there. And so, So we're, I've found, you know, as OTs, we're really, we tend to be very collaborative. We're very passionate. People are willing to share, you know, their intake forms or their, you know, whatever it is. So then you can kind of pick and choose, oh, okay, this is how I think I would approach my first session with a person, or these might be some tools I want to develop a little bit more. So there are places and a lot of different mentorship around business development for people who are curious to, you know, it feels a little bit nerve-wracking to think about opening a, you know, starting a sole proprietorship. There are supports available for that. So, yeah, I definitely want people to know that if you're deciding to take the jump into any of this, there are many of us who will help guide you along the way for sure.
Oh, I love that. And I love that you have this resource available. It's okay. I'd love to add that to our show notes, include the website so that folks will, we'll just have that and have some sort of guidance. Mm-hmm. On that note, if any of our listeners were interested in reaching out, asking questions, would it be okay if they contacted you directly?
Absolutely. So probably the best way is I'm on Instagram as Sported Mama. You can message me there. That's where I've been trying to post anything that's going on with my business and just kind of new exciting things that are happening. And so, you know, I've got some seeds planted and we'll see what 2024 holds. And that will be the place where I'll be sharing what that all looks like. People can also email me, carlin@supportedmama.com. You can find me through my website. So I try to be very available and accessible to people because I am. I'm just so passionate about this work. So any way in which I can get more of us out there doing this, I'm happy to try to do that the best that I can.
Oh, excellent. Well, like I said earlier, we are so fortunate to have you sort of pioneering this work and really making yourself available to, you know, some of us who might be interested in really pursuing a similar path. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your work, sharing your expertise. I am excited for you. I'm super excited for what's to come. It's only what, February, and 2024 has already been quite an exciting year. So I cannot wait to hear what's next for you and your chapters. And we need another episode for that.
Yes, part two. Thank you so much, Patricia. It's been so lovely speaking with you today. I really am grateful to you for this platform and just connecting like-minded OTs who've had, you know, uncommon paths that we can really connect with one another and continue to be inspired by each other. So thank you for the opportunity to share today.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.